Yes, everybody, what's happening? I should have pressed the intro thing, really, shouldn't I then? But I didn't.
Usually.
Yeah, I usually did. I just realised after I just unhid that, and I was like, ah, bollocks. Anyway, how's everyone doing? Are you well?
All right, mate. Yeah, I'm good. I like the haircut.
It's all right, isn't it?
It's decent, that, mate. Welcome to the dark side.
I've shaved mine, and Jay's grown a beard. What's happening? We're all merging into one person.
The world really has gone mad.
They all do wonder this will happen. As I just said, I might have to run off at some point in the middle of this. So if I do, I apologise already, but I'll be back in a bit if I do.
Yeah.
Just got some posts being collected.
Collected. Very posh.
Shit, you.
It's not posh, is it? It's all a fucking paddock merch. There's loads of it. Standing in a fucking queue at what's it with it? Bollocks to that noise. Right, there's been a bit of an update today. But there has and there hasn't. Aren't they? They've said, right, sport can't return until the 1st of June. So everyone's just gone, 1st of June, the football's back. And they're like, that ain't what he said.
It's not what we said. It's not what he said. It's not what he said, mate. Calm down.
But it's what everyone's understood, isn't it?
Mate.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, despite what you all may think, I'm a relatively educated man. But I am struggling very, very badly to understand any of this. I watched Boris Johnson's speech last night, and then, you know, did what I always do. I went to looked on Twitter to find out what my opinion of it is. And I was glad to see that I wasn't alone and that no one understood it either. And it was like, you know, go out if you want, but don't. You know, go to work if you want to, but if you can work from home, do that. And I think the football thing's just the same. It seems to be very ambiguous and sort of lots of ifs and buts and maybes. And I still think we may end up, you know, seeing the worst yet to come because people have been going out and chilling and mixing a little bit as well because of this sort of mixed messages and the stuff that people have thought.
Unlimited exercise time, go sit in the sun at the park. Quality.
Why have you said those words? And no, also, you can, go where, you can go wherever you want as well. You can jump in your car and drive 500 miles to go and sit on the beach as well. Great idea, that.
You can only see one other person from an household, though. Well, another family member or something was it?
But is that still 2 meters distance?
2 meters.
No cuddles.
But you can go to work and mingle.
Oh no, none of that.
So yeah, so it's me, Steve, and Joe could go to the office and spend all day working in there.
But none of that. Apart.
But no, but if we see each other in the park, we're not allowed to. We can only have meet one of us in the park. You can't meet three of us together in the park.
It's you know
it makes sense, doesn't it?
It's a complete nonsense. And
are you staying alert, though?
Mate.
Well, do you know what?
Switched on as fuck.
When I leave my house, I usually have my eyes closed. I usually walk around our estate like that. And then I remembered the message of staying alert, so I've started walking with my eyes open now. So thanks for that, Boris. You've just saved my life.
I just started drinking a load of Red Bull today. Because
I haven't had a message about it. Are you sure? I used to get a text when you're buying Red Bull.
Oh yeah, you do, don't you? That's not even a weird light. No, you actually have, haven't you?
I've had a text when you were buying Red Bull. I got a text. I've just seen Stephen Allison buying Red Bull off someone. I was like, right, cheers. Keep me updated. huge truth.
Tell me something I don't know.
Yeah. And
then I got a message once saying, you better have a word with Adam McCullough. He doesn't like Friends. And I'm like, guys, these things have nothing to do with me. Why are you bothering with this shit?
Isn't it mad though, right? I don't argue on Twitter. That's what Jay does. So today I was conversing with people with different opinions on Twitter. Good enough, isn't it? It seems like a lot of people are just, they decided that they're a conservative. Therefore, the bellends that are in charge are doing the best that they can. I have an issue with this. We're an island, right? New Zealand's just absolutely just... New Zealand's, like, completed it. COVID, done it. completed it, mate. Whereas we've got the second highest amount of deaths and in the world. And Britain's nowhere near the top of population. So it makes no fucking sense.
I was looking this up yesterday. We're 21st, I think, in terms of population and second in terms of the number of deaths. But what made me laugh was the other day, this is why you have to question your own sanity. So I was watching the update, the press briefing, and they had a graph comparing us all to other countries. And a journalist asked the question, and he went, "We shouldn't be comparing ourselves to other countries."
He literally had a graph. You brought that.
You just had graph in your hand.
You brought it with you.
I had to rewind the telly. I thought, I'm having an acid flashback here. What's going on?
On one hand, you go, right, okay. Maybe it isn't entirely fair. There's multiple, like, people was comparing Sweden to Britain and stuff like that. And you're like, okay, the population densities are different. You probably should be comparing Sweden to the rest of the Scandinavian nations. And it's probably fair to compare Britain to the likes of Germany, Spain, Italy, and France and stuff like that. Very similar sort of distribution of people, some large cities, quite a few sort of country bumpkin sort of places and stuff like that. But we're still the second. That's what blows my mind, is like, okay, someone was always going to be worse. Didn't expect it to be America in the way that it has been. But the fact that we're fucking second is bananas.
It makes me laugh as well, because someone pointed this out yesterday when I highlighted that. They were saying, well, you've got to don't forget the amount of passengers that fly through London in particular. And then I think, yeah, that's a fair point. So thankfully, we closed our airports early and we did lots of testing early at the airports. No, we didn't do that.
The issue is there was so many. We got it quite late, really. We started only getting, I think it was like 1,000 cases. We was literally 3 weeks behind Italy, weren't we? I think that was a crack. And Spain. And miles behind China and all these other places. And the initial talk was all about, we're going to go for herd immunity. And then someone went, are you fucking drunk? And he went, all right, we're not going for herd immunity. And then they started, I mean, the lockdown was initiated, but again, there wasn't any sort of tracing. There wasn't any sort of mass testing. It took them to just lie about the testing last week to even get to their targets, which they set.
Even the lockdown stuff, they let Cheltenham go ahead.
Yeah.
After it had all kicked off, after the last game.
And do you know what, as well?
After that day, it all kicked off, and they went, nah, let it go.
I've got to be honest as well. Manchester City Council annoyed me because we had the St. Paddy's Day parade after Cheltenham, after Atletico Liverpool. So it's all very well, you know, us three. I mean, the Manchester authorities saying, oh, well, you know, the government, this government, that. You allowed a St. Patrick's Day parade after all that had gone on, with thousands of people on the streets, with the kids and the older people and everything and all that, knowing full well that it wasn't a good idea. And I think, you know, you have to take responsibility for that.
I'm not a fucking scientist and I'm not a fucking member of parliament, but I closed my office. That I can only control my own island, right? And I closed all of our shit nearly a week before that everyone else did. And I said, lads, take it all home. Take all the gear home.
We were shut 4 or 5 days before lockdown at least, because we just went, we can't do it. There's no point us doing it right now. Because if we
it's not right for us to do it right now. No one told us. I'm not a fucking scientist, but I made the fucking decision by just looking at what was going on in the world and went, oh, we need to fuck this off. And we did. If I can fucking see it, and as people say, stick to fucking talking about football from a fucking sales assistant at Next. Like, if I can fucking see it coming, I'm not in charge of the country and I'm not having meetings with, you know, the World Health Organization or fucking people who are actually clued up on this stuff. It's a fucking joke.
It is, and it worries me now that the government's sort of thinking is we can shift the blame already. You know,
well, that's it.
Is it really about what's best for this country and what's best for the people in it? Or is it more about, well, if we put it in their hands and then we say, oh, the numbers are terrible because we told you to stay alert and control the virus and then you all went out partying, so it's not our fault. Which is what worries me, is that are they doing the right thing? Because, you know...
What did New Zealand do? They enacted heavy testing and tracing, didn't they, early doors. They stockpiled PPE once it looked like it was getting a bit out of hand elsewhere before it even landed there. And then everybody who landed in New Zealand, it was like, hey, guess what, fuckface? You're in quarantine for 2 weeks. And everyone was like, well, that's not fair. I'm like, well, them's the fucking rules, so deal with it. And I'm annoyed at all these fucking people that are talking about the constitution and stuff like that, and it's stripping away freedoms. Look, no cunt wants to be sitting inside watching Netflix for 2 months at a fucking time. Honestly, I guarantee that. All right, some people are pretty happy with this situation, but most people don't want to be doing that. We know one who loves it. Yeah. Most people don't want to be fucking doing this. And most people are well aware of the financial implications of this. And yes, more people are probably going to fucking do themselves in with depression over the fact that they're not working or, you know, all of the other, you know, social issues. that happening at the fucking time. But the best thing for the fucking country and the world is to stay in your fucking house and watch Netflix just for a bit and then let this pass. You know, it is going to be a second wave. There's already been an increase in numbers in Germany since they relaxed it. The South Korea's seen a little bit of an increase.
And it went.
Yeah, and I guarantee we're going to see an increase like next week after what happened today. You know, so...
The scary thing is as well, you know, I think everyone knows we're not all Tories, but you have to be able to in a position where you can trust your government. So when your government's telling you something, you need to be in a position where, yeah, you can question it, but when it comes to health things, you have to be able to say, okay, I have a little bit of faith that they've listened to the scientists and they know what they're doing. So like last night when Boris Johnson was talking about reception kids going back to school, you know, my missus was like, that ain't happening. In June, I don't trust this government, and you know the WhatsApp groups between the mums was going mad, and teachers and stuff have been posting things about, well, we're not doing that. You know, we don't have faith. There's just a lack of trust in this government and faith in it that it's doing the right thing, and that's what really worries me, because you know you end up just in a situation where one set of people are going to be doing something, and the other people are going to be something different, and meanwhile the government's going to be trying to hold all this together, and it ain't going to work. You need to have some clarity and some faith.
If I said to you, name one person who's got the Rona, who are you going to name? Quickly think of someone that you've heard of that's got the Rona.
I can name people who've had it, like, you know, Boris Johnson or Matt Hancock, right, or
Boris.
Arteta.
Alex, give me someone who's got the Rona.
We've had extended family who've had it and stuff like that straight away.
But Boris is the main one.
So Boris is the main one.
The Prime Minister, one of the most protected people in the country. This is the guy that was walking around hospitals bragging about how he... That's a great comment. Boris is bragging about walking around hospitals shaking hands with people. Guess what? I ain't no fucking doctor. But I knew that fucking shaking hands with people who've got a communicative disease isn't a fucking good move.
No, and then he, you know, he was painted as some sort of martyr, and it was like, all right, listen, you know, obviously he was very ill, and I get all that, but it was almost from his own stupidity, and then all of a sudden now the narrative becomes, oh, you have all these front page paper, the front page is going, oh, you know, he's like, he sacrificed himself almost, and it's like he's jumped on a grenade. Well, no.
It was being a silly cunt shaking hands with people who had the Rona, and then he got the Rona.
Yeah, at a time when, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was quite important we had a prime minister who was functioning.
Yeah. Jay, if there was a disease going around called dog shititis, right, which you got from licking dog shit, and I was like, I've got dog shititis, and you'd be like, well, how did you get that, Steve? And I'd be like, well, how do you think I got it? You know what I mean? It's my own fucking fault, clearly, going around licking dog shit.
There isn't, is there? I just need to clarify that.
There's not. That comment bad that I've warmed to Piers Morgan, and it's right. That's really worrying. When he starts putting tweets out, and I'm going, fuck hell, he's right again, isn't he? It's a problem here, isn't there?
Well, he had a minister on today, not an MP, didn't he?
Absolutely he
didn't know what he was talking about.
No.
And it was just gobbledygook. You can go out and meet some members of your family, yeah, you can do that. And he's like, well, you said, the government said we can't. Oh, no, yeah, you can't. What are you on? Right. And then, you know...
Dominic Raab.
Yeah,
have you listened to the Radio 4 thing?
No, I need to.
Oh, mate, he's been absolutely...
Is he flip-flopping?
It's bad. It's really bad. It's really... The thing with the Boris thing, you know, these MPs getting put on the spot and absolutely crumbling, you can sort of understand they start getting peppered with questions. There was people for... They must have been doing that for days, planning what Boris was going to say last night.
Yeah,
think
they was.
How much people... And how much money they got paid to sit there and go, right, you need to say this, you need to say this, you need to say this. If someone had wrote that for Stephen Houston and you'd done that, they'd have been sacked the day after.
Even the
If you had a video written that was that bad that everyone put out and went, I'm not quite sure what he was saying there. He was saying one thing there, and then he said another thing, and then he started talking about going out and meeting parents and stuff, and then
make that video private. How many views has it got? Quick,
yeah, that's it.
Quick, take it down.
And you're like, imagine if he asked everyone the next day, you have to put out a 50-page document just to summarize what he said in 15 minutes.
That's the bananas thing, is that you go, when the government puts out a message, ideally you want it to be nice and succinct. I saw yesterday a 50-word sentence explaining the 7-word catchphrase. The catchphrase is meant to be like, you know, the keep calm, carry on. What's it meant to mean? It's meant to mean, you know, remain stoic, carry on with what you're doing. You're not supposed to need to have like a PowerPoint presentation and three DVD book series where you need to explain what the fuck this supposedly simple thing is. How's it right? Do you know what? The last one was actually really good. Stay home, set live, NHS, or whichever way around it was.
Yeah.
It was simple and everybody got it. It was a bit patronizing, but we knew what you fucking meant. Stay home, set NHS, save lives. Sound, got it. Stay alert. How alert do I need to stay? And is someone covering the night shift, or do I have to like stagger my fucking family?
Well, that was, and that's the thing on that Radio 4 thing. The woman goes, "But can you explain what stay alert means?" He goes, "Well, it means we need to stay alert just in case."
When you're repeating something, when someone asks you for the definition of it, you know you're fucked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If that's your explanation, it's just to repeat what the actual words are.
Hey, you didn't think you was going to get an Einstein quote today, but Einstein said, "If you can't explain something simply, you don't understand it enough."
Oh, see, this is why we come on Paddock. Albert Einstein quotes flying around.
Not for the football talk.
4 on a Monday afternoon, eh?
What? Talk about football. There's nothing left to say.
It's not coming back, is it?
Yeah.
Did you get Tasker to send you the 1991 European Cup Winners' Cup run yet?
No, I haven't. I'll get onto that. That's on my way.
You're laughing, but we asked. He was like, "If I've got it on the system, I'll send it you."
Oh no!
I might have it on VHS somewhere.
But no one's watching that. It needs to be at least like 240p.
this is like 12p.
Oh my god!
We'll dig that out, mate. We'll do that. We'll do the entire run. That's a given, mate. That's happening. Do you know what I mean? Don't worry about that.
That underrated cup run.
Everyone who goes to that final, and I you'll know them as well. Like lads, you've done. You know, Moscow, they've done the new camp, they've done the lot. But the ones that have done that and Rotterdam all say Rotterdam was the final for fans. It was, you know, we took over the entire stadium.
It's a truly tin pot cup that don't even exist anymore.
Yeah, but you look at it though, and this is the thing that people dismiss it. You know, I've heard numpties on social media, who I often row with occasionally, saying things like, you know, Fergie didn't do anything when before he came to United. And you're like, well, okay, yeah, I get the idea that the cup winners' cup was tin pot, but because you only had like one team from each country in the European Cup and the UEFA Cup,
we played Barcelona.
Yeah, Fergie won it with Fergie won it with Aberdeen, and he beat Real Madrid in the final. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
So it was tin pot, but it was also not tin pot.
Yeah, you know, we
only one team went into the European Cup, didn't it? So
yeah, you know, that Montpellier side with Valderrama, very, very good team. You know, it wasn't just like, oh yeah, you turn up and you're in the final and you're playing Dundee. It was tough games. So yeah, definitely.
I remember a lot of people. I mean, not just that. English football have been in the dark ages for a few years anyway. It was the first season we was allowed back into Europe, so there was a mysticism about that. It was my first proper season watching, so I didn't really understand the politics around that being a thing. But I do remember at the time people talking of Europe. European football at the time, early 90s, had a mysticism attached to it. It was weird. And was it the following season Atletico Madrid knocked us out of it, like the first round or something?
Yeah. We won. I think we conceded two late goals, didn't we, away? I think we were 1-0 down and they scored.
Never seen it, Jay, because I don't think that shit was on telly.
Yeah. It was the same reason. Or again, something had it on. Yeah, it was one of them.
I wasn't born, so going.
That's no excuse. Why were you there, part timer? Hey? You trying to come lately, make me sick.
I know, yeah. How dare you not be at that cup final?
Yeah, imagine not being born, you dick. So you know, there was excellent teams in it. There was tough teams in it, and I think so that would have been 91-92. We got knocked out of it early doors. Then in 92-93, did we go into any European competition on the back of the League Cup win?
No, we would have done, wouldn't we? 92-93. That's a good question.
Let's have a look because I don't remember.
We'd be second, didn't we? Would have been in, wouldn't we? Been in the UEFA, finishing second behind Leeds.
Hang on. Did we not play Gothenburg that season? Let's have a look.
Don't forget as well, during this time, we won the Super Cup against Red Star
Belgrade. How was that game?
Unlike certain people down the M62, we didn't celebrate it like it was a World Cup win. Fergie just went, got the trophy and went, yeah, nice one. Right.
Oh, no, I remember this game, actually. I do remember this game.
Go on.
Because there was some outrageous debuts given in this game. You should remember this, Jay. I'm actually disappointed you don't. Torpedo Moscow.
Oh!
Torpedo Moscow.
Yeah.
As if you don't know who Torpedo Moscow are.
I don't know who Torpedo Moscow.
Nil-nil away. Nil-nil at home.
Great.
Beat on penalties.
Yeah. I think
Gary Neville made his debut in this game.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Grim times, mate. Grim times.
Do you remember? Did you watch it on telly? Because that was like a 3 p.m. broadcast, that, by the way. I think that must have been like 7, 8 o'clock in Moscow. And because it was 3 o'clock. I remember watching it at my mate's house. Just got home from school. Matches on. And it's like, it looked like it was broadcast from the 60s. All right, hang on. I'm going to see if there's any footage of it.
Yeah, I vaguely remember this. I think there's Andy on there at Old Trafford, if my memory serves.
Oh, there you go. The first result is September 30th, Torpedo Moscow 0, Manchester United 0. Yeah, it was dark.
Was it half empty at Old Trafford for the game, if I recall?
I'm just looking at the away game. This looks half empty, to be honest. It says the attendance at Old Trafford was 11,000. No, 19,000 at home. That would have been during the rebuild.
I think the capacity would have been 32, 33 at the time. But still, you know, it shows you the first round of the UEFA Cup against Torpedo Moscow wasn't exactly mouthwatering.
Bloody hell. Yeah. Some of the pictures from this. Gary Neville played.
Am I right in thinking as well, Steve, that the 3 foreigner rule would have counted for this?
Yeah, that's why Gary Neville played, I think. Let me get the team sheet up.
If Gary Walsh is in goal, then you know it's definitely 100%. It was a 3 foreigner rule.
But, and this is something people don't or can't take into account when they're discussing should Fergie have done better in Europe. Yes, but the first 15 years of him being at the club, there wasn't the 4 teams into the Champions League like you get now. You get so many more rolls of the dice to do it now, and people in England still aren't doing it. So you can't really compare. These teams, the
93 to 94 team, I think me and you've spoken about this in the past, was one of my favorite teams, if not my favorite, just the football, the games that were involved in, the way it was. And people was going, well, you know, you won the double, but you didn't win the in Europe. But we were severely hurt by that 3 foreigner rule, because you look at our team was like Schmeichel, Hughes, Chockey, Keane when we got him, you know,
right? The team at home. Hang on, Gary Neville didn't play away. No, he didn't.
He must have been very young here then, Gary Neville, 92, 93.
Yeah, he was 17, I think.
Bloody hell.
Right, so Gary Walsh, Steve Bruce, Gary Pallister, Irwin and Blackmore. So that was probably the defence. Although Lee Martin played, so maybe it wasn't. Maybe Blackmore played in midfield.
Blackmore could move up, couldn't he?
So it was probably Blackmore, Kanchelskis, McLaren, Webb in midfield. Hardly.
Real Webb.
Robbo, Keane, Ince, etc. No. And then Mark Hughes and Danny Wallace up front.
Poor Danny Wallace.
Not exactly rocking around a Christmas tree sort of team.
No.
And then at home, very similar. Giggs played, Ince played. Pretty shit, like.
Yeah, that's not great, is it? If we're being honest. But I'm guessing that Fergie wasn't too fussed.
One of the advertising hoardings in Torpedo Moscow's ground is Rave, Galactica, All Nighter.
Sounds like a good night.
Sounds like a t-shirt.
An all night rave in Moscow in the 90s. I'm there. Take a few of them disco biscuits, you won't be getting up in the morning. Bloody hell.
What a player Kanchelskis was, says Ross. Oh,
yeah, he was mint money.
He was. He suffers a little bit, like some like Whiteside and Robbo and that. They suffer a little bit because of how big that class of 92 sort of lot went on from. And he was obviously jettisoned in 95 with Hughes and with Paul Ince. So he just sort of gets brushed under the carpet because what came after him sort of achieved a bit more. But he was unreal.
First ever Premier League hat trick for United.
Was it? Remember him standing on the ball?
Oh yeah, doing that.
Yeah.
Mid dribble, mate. That does a million retweets now.
Yeah.
If a player does that ridiculous. In the middle of a game now, forget about it. Can't do
people,
shit like
people
that.
People make Twitter accounts off the back of it. Do you know what I mean? Come on.
Yeah.
See what I mean?
Well, think of that Balassi clip against bloody Liverpool.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's done. Imagine if Kinchelski...
Do you know what I used to love about Kinchelski? Says he'd get down the right the wing and he didn't matter. He didn't care. He didn't look up and see who was in the box, what was going on. He just lever it into the box like he rocket. And it was like, go on, you get on the end of that. I've done my bit. Do you know what I mean? And basically, if you touch that ball, it's coming off your foot like an Exocet missile. So all you've got to do is touch it and it's going in, because it was unreal. He was mint, and it was just such a, like you say, it's such a shame that he doesn't really get the credit, because the way he left and things like that, and obviously the class of 92, he almost gets dismissed, I think, a little bit.
He totally gets dismissed. Yeah. Do you remember the little stutter run that he used to do where he sort of hop in midair as dribbling because he was running so fucking fast? You don't see that nowadays.
He used to do that, didn't he, with his arms, remember? Steve,
he was a weird guy. I need to just change the ISO, one sec.
Yeah, you've gone a bit.
What's he doing?
And all over the place. He's got to go out with the camera.
Just use the camera that's on the laptop. That's what I do. None of this fancy damn business.
No, I've got one set up and everything.
How do you half live?
Oh dear, people mithering me about golf now. I'm like, you get to play golf when you're allowed to play golf. Just fucking calm down. You've been told it's going to happen. Oh my god.
Bex was better. Yeah, ultimately Bex was better.
He was.
But there was nothing like being a flying winger, because Beckham was entirely different.
No,
he was a proper flying winger.
That team, 94, I think that's one of the things that you love about it when you talk about it, is because you had Giggs or Sharp on the left and you had Andre on the right, and it was just bombing forward, wasn't it? And it was like, most of those games we won, if you look at it, we've had seasons where we were battering teams. You look at those games, a lot of them were 2-1, 3-2, 3-1. We weren't going out and steamrolling loads of teams. They were quite end-to-end, but we'd win. But it was sort of like counter-attacking and just end-to-end. And it was just mad. And plus, in those days, you'd get away with the sort of challenges that just nowadays you'd be banned for life. So it was great. You know, Ince and Keane in the middle, you'd get away with all sorts.
And Robbo. Ince, Keane and Robbo. You was getting kicked.
And Eric and Mark Hughes up front.
Yeah, he was definitely getting kicked.
With that one.
There's a big thing about supposedly Fergie wasn't a very good tactician.
When you say there's a big thing,
there's a couple of bellends that are saying Fergie wasn't a great tactician. There's a brilliant example of Norwich City sort of invented ticker tacker. Was it under Nigel Worthington?
No, it was at all. Don't Mike Walker.
In the early 90s, I think we came up from the first division, whatever it was, or you know, second division back then, and they played. Chris Sutton was part of this team, actually.
You know who else was, don't you? Mark Robbins. That first
season. Yes, he was. Mark Robbins was, So they played what would now represent a team that had a high defensive line. They played football on the floor, which was weird at the time, because everyone, you played 4-4-2, or you went back to Europe where you come from, you fucking foreign twat. Is basically what the rules was. You play 4-4-2, you have wingers, you have a big man and a small man, and you have fucking brown sauce in your breakfast, right? Them's the rules, right? If you don't like the rules, fuck off back to France. So Norwich played effectively a tiki-taka style of football. But obviously tiki-taka has, as we've seen, Pep Guardiola took it to another level, and some other managers, Bielsa and that, have took it to just these crazy other levels. There are frailties in it, in which that you have to have all of your team in a very small area of the pitch, which usually means a really high line, which usually means that there's frailties that you can get in behind. Sir Alex Ferguson clocked it. Now, how many sides is there on a football pitch for wingers?
I
believe two.
Yeah.
Two would be the correct answer. You explain to me how Fergie played three wingers in a game at the same time.
He did, didn't he?
Sir Alex Ferguson played three wingers. He just invented a new tactic to play against Norwich. And if you go and watch, because it's definitely on YouTube, because I watch it twice a month, right? You go and watch this fucking game where United put on the tactical masterclass, which is still relevant to this day when you come up against a team that plays with a high line. Cantona's a withdrawn forward. He operated within the lines. United played a 4-4-1-1 when Cantona played, and he did what he wanted. Remember the goal against Arsenal with Seaman off his line where he sort of like flicks it up over him? I think it might hit the underside of the bar. Watch where he is at the start of that move. He's in his own half, right? This is our striker. Cantona did what he wanted. So having Cantona sort of in this fucking quarterback sort of role, which you would, you'd call it a Pirlo kind of role now. And then he had three wingers ahead of him. And United won back possession. I think, I'm sure I read somewhere, the objective of the time was either to find McClare or Ince. Because I think McClare and Ince was like a pair of sixes. You had Cantona sort of ahead of them, and then three wingers just, they didn't have a side. They just fucking did whatever they wanted. It's 92-93. 92-93 it was. Someone for asking what year is this Norwich game. 92-93, it's the Norwich away game. And in about 10, 15 minutes, United score three goals, all on a counter, and absolutely end it. And you got to remember at the time, because Norwich was playing this weird system that no fucker had any idea what to do with, they were second in the league.
Do you know Norwich! What, do you know what I think about? I think this might be one of the games where, I don't even remember this thing, they used to drive a bus or a coach, not a coach, a truck onto the pitch at Old Trafford with a TV at the side of it, a massive TV. Yeah. And you could buy tickets to go and sit in the stand and watch it on this big TV.
You say it was massive. It was about an 80-inch TV in the grand scheme of things.
You'd have it in your front room. I'm not even in your front room, in the spare room. Yeah. And you used to pay like a quid or whatever. I remember me and my dad went to a few of them. I'm sure Norwich was the first one. And they'd like put things on the pitch and drive this on. This is proper old school. And then like it was mint though because like you're actually like, it's like almost being there, isn't it? In a way, because you're in the crowd and you're jumping
but,
about.
But not at all.
Yeah. And put it this way, it weren't HD in them days as well. Do you know what I mean?
No,
but
and it probably cut out four or five times as well.
It was just
give it a smack, Terra.
Yeah. But it was great because obviously, you know, this is before the days of the internet and in watching every single game on some foreign channel. Yeah, you just didn't have that. You didn't have that at all, which is what makes me laugh when a lot of people go, who were like, 21, 22, 23, you're entitled to your opinion. I'm not knocking that. But when they say things like, well, the mid-90s team weren't that great, and I think, well, how many times did you actually watch that team? Because, you know, unless you were going to them games,
it wasn't on
television. You weren't watching it. You watched, like, well, United run Sky maybe once a month, Match of the Day for 2 minutes, 5 minutes tops. So,
and I've watched Match of the Day where it's totally changed the game I saw.
Yeah, exactly, 100%. Yeah. So that's, you know, I wouldn't say that the Forest team of the 70s is crap because I never watched them. I don't know. I know what they won and what they achieved, and it was amazing. So when you get these people saying, oh, the team of the 90s, I think, well, you've not really seen it unless...
Boom, there you go. Norwich were also a force. They beat Bayern that year.
First English team to do that at the... well, not the Allianz. It was the other one before that.
So you're
right. And someone said about how if Fergie was so good, why didn't he do it against Barcelona? I'm like, well, the first thing is...
Messi didn't play for fucking Norwich, did he?
We did, exactly.
People dismissed
and
2008.
In 2009,
why?
We would have been a bit closer, but with Darren Fletcher was the 2009. Darren Fletcher changed. Sounds daft, but you put Darren Fletcher into that midfield in the Roman final, it would have made a massive difference in the first time. The 2011 one, they were very, very good.
But Rio's really also got a couple of points, hasn't he, on where he thinks it went wrong, which is, that is top telly, that. That's the sort of shit when I tune on TV. That's what I want. I don't want your opinion on that player or that player because it's generally pretty beige. But when you go, here was our tactics in this scenario and for these reasons, that's when I go, shut the fuck up. What are you saying?
Yeah.
Because that for me is what I want to fucking know. That's where I see educational. You just don't see that.
No.
But yeah, that Norwich team were fucking special. And that match represents a fucking big thing. And there's a few others. I'll try and think of some more tactical masterclasses from
Fergie. I'll tell you one. Top. The 96 final. The game for Scousers. Because he sacrificed Keane for that game. Keane on McManaman. And people were going, what, really? And it worked because McManaman was unreal around that time. He was. People underrate him. I know he's a bit of a gobshite. And people automatically think if you look on the telly, then you weren't very good at football. He was.
He still went to Real Madrid.
Exactly.
In quite a decent time.
Champions League. You don't do that if you...
And he got man of the match in the Champions League final.
Exactly.
They don't give them away as much as he's a bellend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Fergie thought, right, stick Keane on him. He's their outlet. He's the one that causes everything. That's going to sort of nullify them. And it did. It was a terrible game. It's awful, that 96 final. But we won. We won the double with a team as well, made up mainly of children. So, you know, it's
the start of that season was Alan Hansen. You won't win anything with kids.
Yeah. You know, and Fergie,
tune in.
Got it right. They were stood there in the white suits before the final looking like knobheads, thinking, yeah, you know, we're going to win this, Spice Boys and all that garbage. And he did exactly what he needed to do. It was tactically a masterclass, and he got it exactly right. But people get pent up on the whole Pep Guardiola 2011, 2009. As you just pointed out, Alex, there's mitigating circumstances in the 2009 one.
It's also a cup competition.
I think we've lost Alex, haven't we?
You can be outdone. Yeah, it sounds like it looks like he's frozen. You can. It's a cup competition. You need a lot of luck in a cup competition. A league, it generally evens itself out. You don't really get a lot of luck in leagues.
No.
But you can get lucky and get all the way from. I mean, Liverpool in 2005 is an example of how lucky you can get in a cup. And I'm sure United have had countless opportunities where we've been lucky in a cup. I'm just having a look here. The Champions League group stage that we had in 94, 95. When we went out in the group stage, Galatasaray, a draw away and a win at home. Lost to Barcelona 4-0. You might remember that.
Yeah.
What was the attendance?
Away? At the new camp? Oh, go on, give it some...
114,000.
I was about to say it would have been that's the record there. Nicky Butt played in that game, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, it's not a great team.
Yeah, I remember, but you know, that's one of the games that probably moulded him into the player he came. You know, you go to a new camp as a 19, 20-year-old and having support with a bit of a masterclass, then you're going to learn a lot from it, you know what I mean? It's a baptism of fire almost, so he did really well. He's back.
Losing to Gothenburg did us. Gothenburg, you know, top the group.
Do you know what sticks in my thing? Was it 96, 97? Was that Dortmund? Mate, we played him off the park in Germany and lost. And we played him off the park at home and lost.
Mate, Andy Cole must have had 27 shots that game.
Honestly.
Rota Voldegrad. This was a bad year, 95, 96. So this Alan Anson's come out and said, you know, we're not with kids. We lose to York in the cup. Didn't really go down so well. And then we lose to Rota
Voldegrad. Oh, my God.
In the UEFA Cup in September. Fucking Rota Voldegrad. The two scorers for United, I hear you ask. Okay, it was Schmeichel and Scholes.
I was at that game, right? Do you know what? I remember that game. I remember when Schmeichel scored, I thought he'd put us through. So I was screaming like a lunatic, right? Like going off my head. I was only about 13, 14, whatever. I was 15. But yeah, like I'm going mental. And I realised that the celebrations around me were somewhat muted. I was like, why is no one else like really getting into this? We've gone through. And he's like, nah, we're not. And I was like, oh.
I remember European nights as well, because European football, especially we weren't really getting to the latter stages of it. European football usually meant like midweek on a Wednesday and fucking Baltic inside Old Trafford. Just a standard like -2. Just always fucking freezing. And that's just one of my enduring memories of European football is it's going to be cold.
It's mad, isn't it? Mate, when you look back to those seasons in the mid-90s when it was all like, you know, the Stretford End was getting done up, you had the Pac-A-Mac things, and then they had the pillars up as well at one point, and it was like you could be in a certain seat you couldn't see. Honestly, there was madness going on with that ground over those years. But it was great, you know what I mean? Look back on it.
I find it mad to think about. This is the place that my granddad went to in 1950, 70 years ago.
Are you of the belief that we should stick with Old Trafford, Steve, not to... change the
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Why would you leave?
Well, me and you differ on this, don't we? Because I think if we could build a better stadium that's fit for purpose, I'd be all right with that.
Well, I understand that the transport links are not good.
Yeah.
The car parking situation,
it's not great.
Is not good. The access and egress in and out of the place is fucking shite. It can take you an hour to get off like Old Trafford's like lot, if you like, sometimes. It's not ideal. But then I like the pubs being there. You know what I mean? I like the fact that it needs more pubs on the other side of the ground. I don't want to see move to an industrial estate and what's on there, a KFC and a pizza.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like, I think like there's that argument, there's the history argument as well, but I'm a big believer that the history comes with you. I just think like, is how much work does Old Trafford need doing to it to be where it needs to be? And sometimes, you know, you go to away, get new grounds away, and you think, look at this, the facilities here, look at everything you've just mentioned.
Yeah.
And you're going back to, you see Old Trafford where, you know, you can't, I'm only 5'11". I struggle to sit in him, and I'm like, I mean, all right, I stand up all the time, but it's like, I just, you know, the leaking roof and just little things like that. You just think, really, we're meant to be like the elite club in we're meant to be like the creme de la creme of English football. And this ground is you know, you say it's the ground
it's your granddad went. Fergie arrived, though, isn't it?
It is literally the same ground that your granddad went to. It's not been fucking done up since.
But there's parts of it which haven't changed. The original tunnel, the one in the middle of the two dugouts, that was made out of such fucking crazy reinforced concrete that they're never moving that. Like, they're never going to move that.
They could blow it up and put houses on it, and that tunnel would still be there.
Yeah, well, it literally got bombed, and ain't a scratch on it.
No. I think, to be honest, what you said about like the transport stuff and all that, after all this stuff finally finishes, that could be a massive thing, because it is such a nightmare getting in and out of there, getting to the trams, how crowded it is just getting on a tram from there and all that. They may have to do something different. They may have to make it a different way. They may need to move it. They may need to do massive renovations just outside, never mind the actual ground. Because you can't... They won't let it happen again, where, like, I know there's so many people in the stadium, but the amount of people that are stood at that Old Trafford Met stop is ridiculous queuing up to get in there. It's like you are penned into cages as well. And they literally are. They shut one side and you do that and you're in for... They might not be able to do that. So there might be all sorts of things United have to do.
The Metrolink could be easy if they put more than two fucking carriages on. Just chain them together. They are trains. You can do that.
Yeah.
There's a bigger train going from fucking Ashton to the big Asda.
Yeah. Don't use logic, Steve. Times like this. Come on.
Yeah, and then there's 70,000 people. You see it less at the match with football, but when it's stuff like the grand final, it's Super League and stuff like that, then you've got a lot of people that are the entire ground's out of town near enough. That's when it's mad. That's when you just see the absolute shit show. People who are regular match goers have generally got into the routine of how to avoid this utter shit show that you're about to fucking find, and then you're holding an event that's not like that. And then you just see the infrastructure fall to pieces. Like, I watched Liam Gallagher at the cricket club, and that's hilarious. Joe, you just see, this is when the fucking place just totally falls down. You're like, well, this area is used to a lot of traffic. Yeah, but the traffic having local knowledge helps it a lot. When it's just fucking randoms just rocking up, mental. Mm-hmm. Imagine what it'd be like with 100K in there.
That's what we should have, though.
It should be. If it's going to be shit, it may as well be full. May as well be fucking properly mad. We should have
a much bigger pass capacity than we've got. Do you know what I mean? But
100,000's belting it. Listen to that. 114,000 in the old Camp Nou. That's 35,000 more than we've got Old Trafford at the moment.
Do you know what I mean? And, like, you know, when you've got a capacity, say you've got 100K, you can do certain things. You can give a big... I know we do it anyway, but you give a big chunk of tickets to local kids or whatever.
Yep.
You can do stuff like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. You can maybe look at lowering certain prices. You know, it's doable. So people go, well, we can't even sell out every game now, but you do certain things to make it easier. Do you know what I mean? So
the ticket price is like 37 quid where mine is. It's not the worst ticket in the Premier League, but it's the sort of where you go, if it was just a little bit more, it gets a bit fucking uneasy.
Yeah.
So... If it was a case of like, well, we make X on a game, but we could increase capacity by 25%, so we can actually reduce tickets by 20% and still make as much money, like, mint, because you'll make weight. No, they've started doing some initiatives, haven't they, to get you in early, different beers on tap and stuff like that. Like, expand that.
Yeah.
I saw the difference. He's going too far, American style. And there's got to be a balance. But, like, when I went to watch San Francisco Giants, the amount of, like, amenities inside the stadium, it was like a fucking shopping mall. There was what they called, like, mega stores inside the stadium, on the concourse. So, like, at Old Trafford, you've got programs, pies, shitters. That's it. In the American stadiums, they've got, like, here's one selling merch. Here's a fucking wine bar. And this is inside the stadium, inside, like, on the concourse. Then there's a shitter. Then there's garlic fries. Then there's hot dogs. That's too far. But if you could, like, look at what they do a little bit.
Then there's a multiplex.
Then there's a
multiplex. Then there's a beach.
Yeah.
Yeah. A cinema.
Yeah. It is mad. Were they all there for the national anthem? Did he play the national anthem before the game?
Oh, yeah. You kind of get locked out.
Of course. I remember when I was at the World Cup, I went to watch USA versus Ghana. And I was in the queue for the drinks and that. And then the national anthem, the American national anthem came on. I was right at the back of this queue. And this entire queue disappeared. Because everyone in the queue ran to get into the ground, into the stand.
That's off a lot.
Yeah, to sing that. And I've never seen anything like it. I was like, if this is good now, no one will give a toss. They just be like, I want my beer. But yeah, it was mad. Like, they all, literally, the queues were empty. They all just went out, and I was like, buzzing straight to the front.
Well, when they used to have the soccer football teams play at my college, you'd have 11 Europeans line up, and the other team would be 11 Europeans, and they'd be playing the national anthem beforehand, and all these lads just looking around going, you are? Literally, the women's team had 9 Swedes and 2 English people playing. Not an American in sight. US national anthem going. It was ridiculous. They loved it, though. They still
do. They do love it. It is a bit intimidating when they start singing the anthem. You think, I better fucking join in here.
Yeah. First time I didn't stand up. And you go, why aren't you standing up? So,
you say, like, I stand with Colin Kaepernick, mate.
Yeah, mate.
Black lives matter to me. Yeah. Thank you.
Like, yeah, I'll stand up. Okay.
Yeah, okay, I'll stand up.
I just tuned in. Please update. Tories are shit. 1991 was mint.
Yeah.
Looks like the Premier League are going to do anything they can to find wiggle room. I did want to bring this up, actually. So last week, there was the Premier League doctors. Now, joint people are like, why don't you leave it to the fucking experts? Okay, cool. Here's what the experts had to say. They had 100 issues with football coming back during a pandemic. That's not one or two concerns, is it? That's one fucking 100. They want to know what the guidelines are for carrying out the bringing football back. They don't... Here's the most fucking damning sentence in all this is that they don't really want to be the ones that are approving guidelines that still carry a risk of sudden death, which is fair, because what a fucking shit thing for a doctor to sign off on. Is this going to kill me? It might. Crack on. Don't really work like that, does it?
Don't you like take a Hippocratic oath when you're a doctor? Like, your first thing is like safety of your patients or whatever, to protect lives. So you know, you're a doctor, you're not a fucking businessman. Your job is to talk from a medical point of view, so that should be it. That's your remit. Look, doesn't matter what it's going to cost the club or the Premier League. That's not your concern. Your question is, how will this affect us health-wise? Is it safe? If your answer is no, then you've done your job. Let the administrators decide whether they're going to take your advice or not. So the doctors have done the right thing. And, you know, that's what they're saying. And that's what they should be saying. They should be allowed to do that.
Oh, transmission of sweat via goalkeeper gloves, heading the ball. Like, there's so many things.
And do you know the thing as well, like, as a footballer, you're going into this game, and this is in the back of your mind, all this shit. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to be the game that you think it's going to be. It's not going to be like LASK. You know, when we played LASK and it was behind closed doors and it was like, everyone was relatively chill and it was all right. You know, we've lost 30,000 people in the UK alone since then. It's changed. And you're going into this. You're gonna have
someone fucking coughs in a wall at a free kick and everyone's
you're not going to be playing your normal game of football. Yeah. It's going to be in your mind. These are human beings and we forget that. And it's like, you know, it's just like, oh, just get on with it, you know. Just suck him in, give him some baby wipes, and it'll be all right. It'll be reets. No, it won't, will it? And you're going to be watching a watered-down version of this game with players that don't want to be there, that are waiting for the safety. Rules that you've changed, so they're not even the proper rules anymore, in front of one man and his dog. Yeah. How is that the Premier League?
It's not the Premier League, is it? Yeah, and I also think, you know, even if they bring in sport to any sort of level back on the 1st of June, you know, we're not going training.
No.
You know, that's 3 months off at least, I would think.
And this is the thing as well. Everyone's saying it's going to have how many tests to get the Premier League back going? And you're like, okay, fine. And then they're saying, well, we need to keep relegation on the table. Right, that's fine. But is the Championship going to get back going? Because they've not got the same amount of money as the Premier League does to do the testing. Yeah. And then if they get back going, does League One... So where do you stop it? Where do you kind of go, well, they don't need to get back going again. They're just, we'll just null and void their league because they can't afford it. I'm not, I mean, I don't think null and void is the right answer because it has gone a long way, but just you can't get it going for, you know, with all these rules and stuff, just to get it finished. It seems crazier than just saying we'll just have no relegation, we end it as is and start from there. That would be easier. We have three extra teams in the Premier League next season and go from there. And you just go, do that.
Going on past the 30th of June, there will be some clubs out there that have got 10 players leaving at the end of this season. And if the new season hasn't started yet, is that an unfair advantage if they bring people in, if you allow them to bring people in to replace those that have gone? If they have 10 players leave, is it fair to make them continue? Because it's far too wishy-washy to just say, we'll get it finished no matter what. You can't.
What if seven of your first team have test positive? How is that fair? Because that's a possibility. What if seven of this team have coronavirus and they get told you're not playing? And now is it luck of the draw?
Your two goalkeepers are out. Your two goalkeepers get it. All right, then. We'll stick John O'Shea in net again. Be right. You know, it's not.
And you come fifth on the back of that. That's not fair.
No. I think there's a lot people. Sorry, go on, Alex.
There is a lot about this home advantage as well, because I think that the bottom teams are, you know, Villa have played, I think something like Villa have got like, should have six or seven home games left of the whatever. It's ridiculous, like percentage. And that is a massive thing for them clubs. They would have got, they'd have got an extra 6 points out of those games than someone else would have done. Or there's always
51% of your home games you win. That's the average across the Premier League.
Yeah.
Is that 51% of home games are won. And when you consider this isn't a binary win lose thing.
No.
There's three options here. So the fact that you can get 51%, that's overwhelming. When you consider just shared out, it would be 33%. That's overwhelming that your home games matter. You know, and then Tom's got it there. What if a player dies?
No, you know what though? Let's be honest. You know, that might sound relatively melodramatic, but it's not. It's not, you know, we've had fit players die without corona. You know, Chetiote, Mark Vivian Foe, it's happened.
Yep.
You know, you're throwing in this deadly virus into players that, okay, yeah, they're fit, they're athletic, the young men, but it's still a lot of it's unknown. People that age are dying as well. It can happen. You know, it could happen. And it's like,
we also don't know what the effects of having the Rona and pushing yourself physically are. We don't know that.
No.
We there's not been a study on, you know, running X amount of distance or, you know, having the same sort of like impact that playing sport can have and contracting the virus. You don't know what the long-lasting, career-lasting implications are, because supposedly there's a hardening of some of the tissue of the lungs with this shit, which means that potentially if you do catch it, you're potentially looking at a reduced capacity even when you've recovered. That's someone's career over. If you're 20% less aerobically capable, forget a fucking top-level career. Forget a top-level career. If you get that at, like, 24.
Yeah.
And also, there's the added thing as well is the celebrations you're going to get. People say, oh, you know, everyone's going to be out. We know the Scouts are going to be out when they win the league in fucking thousands. If people who've avoided relegation, who thought, you know, whether it's Villa fans or whatever, are going to be out in the streets of Birmingham, you have massive crowds, you have to deal with that. There's all this going on. There's so many caveats to this. And, you know, yes, we United fans, yeah, we can say it'll be quite funny if the Scouts didn't win the league. I get that. But that doesn't mean we're wrong.
No, and at the end of the day, mate, we've got two cup competitions we're in. We can come out of this with two fucking competition wins.
We were on form to get top four, 11 unbeaten. You know what I mean?
We could have easily come fourth or possibly even third with a bit of luck and won two fucking trophies. Do you think 100%. I don't want to see United win fucking trophies? Of course I fucking do.
I want to see us in the Champions League where we belong. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? I know I get it, it's different not winning the league for 30 years. I get it, but it's still a fucking disappointment and it's still something I'd rather we finish the season and it happened. But, you know, you just have to think about it logically and it just seems like pie in the sky, this, to me. I just don't see how it's going to work. I just don't, you know.
They're going to do it, though.
I thought, are they, though?
That train's in the station right fucking now and everyone's getting on it.
Yeah. I mean, the German League coming back is kind of, that's their kind of green light to go, we can do it if we get to this level, if we can do that. And that's what, that's what they're saying.
What was the team that, excuse me, the team that had, was it Dresden or someone who had to drop out or whatever?
Yeah, Dresden, I think, had, is it three players?
I think it was more, wasn't it? I might be wrong, yeah. But, and then, and then, you know, say we've got a game, say we play Leicester, our last game, goes to top four, Marcus has got it, or Bruno, or, do you know what I mean? And you're like, what? Oh, right, so we're missing one of our best players because of this. You know, it's just, I don't
people,
know.
And the argument, people are going to go, oh, well, it's the same as an injury. Well, it's not, because if we, if they weren't playing football, they wouldn't have got it. There's a very good chance they wouldn't have got it.
No one's ever caught a hamstring injury because the fucking teammate had one.
Yeah.
I mean.
Or the fucking person making meals for him or whatever, you know, and all the referees.
One fucking person dies. One fucking dinner lady, kit man, fucking groundskeeper dies because they made this comeback. It's bollocks. It's bollocks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the argument that I made last night on McCullough's show as well, anyone that's about to comment, what, my fucking, my uncle's working at a petrol station. I don't want him working either. Yo, my mum and dad are both key workers. They're both fucking working. And I don't want either of them working. They got to work. Footballers don't have to work. And by making football come back, you're making a physio come back. You're making a fucking kit man come back. You're making people come back that don't need to come back. Football can wait this out. Is it going to be different? Yes. Is it going to suffer? Yes. Is it going to fucking have to adapt and change? Yes. But it doesn't need to come back. It's not worth a single fucking life.
And you know, I still have the problem with the testing. I have a huge problem with testing 66,000 people. No, but then people saying that, like you say about key workers, my cousin's a key worker, she's in a care home, and literally there has been four patients with it. It's a psychiatric care home. There have been four patients with coronavirus confirmed on her ward, and she's not been tested yet. And they're talking about footballers getting tested. And you're like, that's wrong. That shouldn't happen. They don't care how much money there is.
It is. It does.
How much money there is?
Horrible sort of feeling, doesn't it? An horrible sort of taste in your mouth. It is. It's not right. You know, you're talking about Pete, Alex. When you asked to name someone, Alex was naming people you know. You know, and then you're looking at it. It's affecting lots of people. And, you know, you said, all right, well, we're going to make these footballers a priority. And it's going to have the opposite effects of what you're trying to do. The justification is it's going to lift spirits. It's not. It's going to make people feel worse in many cases because it's like, this is a nonsense. This sort of diluted version of the game you're trying to give us when people are dying. It's just ridiculous.
It's just, yes, it's because of the money, but fuck me. There's a lot of industries that are going to be suffering. The retail industry, that's probably worth multiples more to the country than football is. Multiples more. Hospitality. I mean, pubs, clubs, restaurants. What the fucking hell do you reckon the impact on that is? How many thousands of people work in those fucking industries?
56% will never open again.
Travel industry ruined on it.
There'll be some, because you've got most of these restaurants that just literally they're owned by one person. They can't get covered, and that's it. They can't pay the rent on it all, so they just they'll end up getting closed.
Obviously, what happens to League One, League Two teams? I don't know. No, I'm not saying I got the answers, but I don't think bringing it back is the answer.
Yeah, no, I mean,
and even if you bring it back, okay, the Premier League's different because it I think like 50% of Premier League money is TV-ish.
Yeah.
That's not the same for League One, League Two. Theirs is what they get through the turnstiles massively. So even bringing it back for League One, League Two, you ain't helping them until there's a crowd there. They don't get a crowd there.
It's just a mess. It is mess, and there's no easier option. But the best option is the most safest. Yes. That for me is the obvious thing. That you know you can't have
null and void. Use this brain power to focus on how do we come out of this safely and effectively. Focus on that. Focus on fucking all the rest of that shit. Don't just think, how can we get it back quick as possible?
The problem is, as well, you've got a lot of the sports journalists as well. They're just too scared to say that. They are.
Yeah.
They're just too scared. They know it. They're not stupid people, despite what we may say about them. Not all of them, anyway. Yeah, some of them are absolute fucking idiots. But a lot of them are relatively intelligent. They know. They know this is nonsense, but are too scared to put pen to paper and say that and say just scrap it because it's an idiocy because they're going to get such a backlash from the likes of Liverpool fans and to a lesser extent Leeds fans as well that they're too scared to do that. So it's just like,
I'm going to be honest with you, I haven't seen a single Leeds fan demanding the season reopen and restart.
Fair enough, then, mate. To be honest with you, I think I've muted the word Leeds from my. I haven't either. But yeah, I mean, you know, they are. They're just scared to do it. And it's a dereliction of duty as a journalist, in my opinion. I know even with football's different. No, it's not. You're still a journalist.
I've
seen a hell of a lot of Liverpool fans demanding it gets played. And even discussing this is because I don't want Liverpool to win it. Let's just caveat this. Of course, I don't want Liverpool to win it.
Yeah.
Of course. That's not my driving function in this. Like I said to you, my love for United exceeds my hatred for Liverpool. I could console myself with a European fucking cup run and an FA Cup and coming fourth and not give a single fuck about them winning the title. I come to terms with that shit in December anyway. Brushing my teeth going, just, you know, the Scousers are going to win the league this year. Deal with that shit. I'm like, okay, Steve, no problem. Right? Yeah. I've been doing that for 5 months, right? So I don't care that they're going to win the league. But I do care about fucking bringing this thing back properly. And actually, like you said, the integrity of the fucking sport is at play here.
The very thing that you're using as a reason to bring it back is the very thing that it's not. Do you know what I mean? It's the very thing it's damaging. You're saying, oh, we need to bring it back for the integrity of the sport. It's damaging the integrity of the sport to force it through in this version with players saying they don't want to do it, doctors saying don't do it, and you're going, lower league clubs aren't getting helped by you doing it, and you're going, well, we need to do it for the integrity. But it's damaging the integrity of the sport. That doesn't matter. We need to do it for lower league clubs, but lower league clubs aren't benefiting from this because there's no attendances. We don't know we need to do it anyway.
Do you want to watch yesterday?
It'd be great.
Yeah.
Little asterisk next to it. Fucking fantastic.
Just give it him. Honestly, just
little
give
star.
Him
an that little star. Yeah. Not quite.
You know, do you want to rewatch yesterday?
Go on.
Damned United.
Do you know what? I love, don't you just love Brian Clough?
Do I love Brian Clough?
He's got a book, mate.
That has got to be the greatest team talk in the history of football. To get to a club and just tell all the players that they don't deserve the title they've just won.
You lot. I want to take all your medals and all your cups and all your medals and all your pots and pans and throw them in the nearest dustbin. Fairly.
Right. If one of us, right, if we all like Leeds, took over Leeds United, even we wouldn't be like that. Even we'd be a little bit like that, yeah. I mean, he hated him that much, he didn't care. Do you know what I mean?
I think he went in there thinking he, one, would do a job, and two, could do a job. And yeah. I don't think he went in to sabotage him.
No, he
went in wanting to beat Don Revie at his own game, at his own club. And ultimately, what he ended up doing with Forest was far more impressive than anything Leeds ever achieved anyway. It was amazing. I mean, not only that, right? Just to illustrate how fucking special Brian Clough is, he took over two teams in the second tier and took them both to win the fucking league after being promoted.
It's ridiculous.
And then with Nottingham Forest, he took it a step further and won the European Cup and then retained it.
And you know, this is the thing, right? People will say, and I've heard this argument, and it's quite, you know, it's a difficult argument sometimes because there's two sides to it. But people look at European Cup and go, well, it was a lot easier than days. And I get that because I've looked at some of the Scousers' runs and you go, well, you know, they didn't play anyone until the final or whatever. But you got to remember, only one team from each country got in it. You know, how many European Cups did we win? We didn't win. I know there's Munich and the different sort of reasons behind that. But it wasn't just a case of you won the league in England, you won the European Cup. It was that easy. It wasn't. Do you know what I mean? And to do it with a team like Forest, where you didn't have a lot of money, you sort of, you know, you were getting all these ragtag of players. The way he got them, he was getting players that, you know, had almost given up. They thought the career was over.
Finished, and he was like, no, he's got a year in him. Get him.
Yeah. You know, and you see, have you heard the story about for the European Cup final thing against Malmo? Peter Shilton was training on a traffic island near the ground. He said, I need to go and train. He's like, well, we'll go and find a bit of grass and go and jump about on it.
Anderson talked about that on the podcast that we did with him. And he goes, fucking like Shilton, one of the greatest goalkeepers of all time.
In the middle
of a traffic island.
Yeah, in a roundabout near the ground. Like, imagine driving in the game and you just see your keeper. jumping around in high heels.
And I'm on the way to the cup final. Not Peter Shilton. Shut me, dickhead.
Do you know what I mean, though? He was mad, wasn't he, Brian Clough? Like, and towards the end, it was a bit sad because obviously drink sort of, but he was a genius. He was a genius. He was not, you know, no one could do what he did. Like, to take those teams, like you said, Derby and win the league, Forest and win the league, and to win back to back European Cups and to sort of win other trophies as well, loads of league cups and stuff. It's just amazing. It really is. And such a character. It's great. It's sort of, people won't realize what a character he was because it's sort of the generational thing, but you should definitely look
at it. Imagine that as well, though. Imagine this on Sky. Like, Sky have that debate now, haven't they, on a Wednesday? Imagine a manager gets sacked. It's probably the equivalent of like when Mourinho. When Mourinho was sacked by United, that he was on the Sky Sports debate that night with, it was before him, Louis. That was what it was like when he got sacked. They had him on Leeds, Yorkshire TV with Don Revie for a debate the night he got sacked. Imagine Jose Mourinho the night he got sacked, because Mourinho was about as outspoken as Clough was, and probably not even as outspoken. And having him there with the manager that he preceded. Can you imagine?
And if you ever like go on YouTube and Google like Brian Clough story, every player's got a story about him. Every player.
Some belters.
Yeah.
It's no wonder Roy Keane's off his fucking rocker, is it? The two managers he played for was Fergie. And Clough.
Imagine that. Imagine taking that attitude and that what you've learned into modern day football now. You're not hiding for nothing, aren't you?
Why didn't Roy Keane work as a manager?
You know.
Doesn't really work, does it?
Doesn't work. Chinning players now, fucking decking them. You're making a mistake. Wrapping the tactics ball around the red. You can't do that anymore.
It was a karate kick, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, at Sunderland. Karate kick with a
25-yard run-up.
Yeah, he set it up, didn't he? He set it up. You see Bright York when he says about it. He said, put the tactics board up, and he left the room, and everyone's thinking, he comes running in and fucking karate kicks.
Imagine
seeing that, and then having to go back out there for the second half, whatever, and play football for that manager. You'd be absolutely brilliant. No. I just wouldn't want the ball. Don't give it me.
Going like, was that metaphorical? Was that? How do I interpret what he's trying to tell me? Kick him in the chest. Got it.
So good. So good. You
know, yeah, Clough is amazing.
Yeah.
And because he was so outspoken and because he was a fucking... He was a bit of a widge, let's be honest. But we all love a widge. There was no chance of him ever getting that England job. And he probably should have. Because now, Gareth Southgate is the boring, fucking safe, knobhead appointment. And the FA's just never changed in 50 years. There was always going to appoint the most safe, boring knobhead they could find.
Yeah. Have you seen that, Steve? From two-shot Tino. That's a good point. I don't know if anyone's mentioned that.
This one?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't know that was the 35th anniversary.
Yeah, I forgot. Because I think Daniel Taylor and someone else, because it's often overlooked and forgot about this tragedy. And I did a bit of research. I read up on it a couple of years ago. And it's as horrific as you can think. It's absolutely horrible. And the way it was treated as well, with almost disdain by the government, it's just... It makes me boils my piss even now. Just
1985. It's right in the height of the hooliganism. So football fans are basically jihadis in the way they're treated by everybody. And Bradford, forgive me if I get this wrong, but here's what I know on the subject: Bradford was a wooden stadium.
I think a lot of it was. Yeah, I think that's the part of the issue.
I believe there was tinder, essentially, not the app you tossers. Like straw and grass and your like paper rubbish and stuff like that, which are just mounted up underneath that wooden stadium. And the terracing was made of wood, but there was little gaps in it, like a stage. And someone dropped a cigarette down there and it just fucking went off like a rocket, didn't it? And was it the main stand? It was like one of the sides of the pitch, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it was. I'm just trying to have a look at. So I'll quickly bring it up now.
I believe it's 56 people died. Something.
That's right. Yeah, 56, like 200 odd injured. I mean, it's just you got a football match and happening. It's and what amazes me is how little it's spoken about. Really, you know, I'm not saying every day we should talk about, but there's almost little attention to it nowadays, and like people almost forget it happened, and it's sad that it's not given the sort of respect it deserves because it's just horrific it happened to that club and the fans that are involved. And Daniel Taylor did a really good thing in The Athletic. He spoke to one of the survivors who lost his brother in it. If you get a chance, go and check out his article, because he went to school with a lad. Daniel Taylor himself went to school with his two brothers. So there's like a connection he knew, but he waited years before he approached him and said, can I have a chat to you about it? Because obviously, you know, the emotional side of it. And he did like an in-depth interview with him when he spoke about it. And it doesn't matter if you're fucking Bradford fan. Right? It matters, got nothing to do with it. If you're a football fan, you'll get it. Go and have a read of that one, because it's really sort of moving and it's just shocking and anger-inducing as well. It just makes you angry.
Part of the reason people died, similar reasons at Hillsborough, the was it Paddington?
Yeah, I think there's an element of that. I mean, again, I'm not au fait with the ins and outs, so forgive me if I'm getting certain things wrong. But yeah, I think you're right. There was about Steve. There's a it had the wooden roof, and it had like roofing felt on it, which is like often no resistance to flames. So it was like also there was no fire extinguisher in the stand, which would be laughable if it wasn't so tragic. It was just a complete shit show.
One block bucket of sand, which had a lot of...
Yeah, do you know what I mean? And then it's not just that, right? With these things that happen, right? And it's horrible and it's tragic, but then you want to learn from it. You want something to happen. You want people to get some sort of closure or be treated with a bit of respect. And they weren't, as you just said there, Steve. Football fans were treated like shit in the 80s, even after a tragedy like that. I think there's sort of a lot of the government sort of attitude towards it was, well, you know, c'est la vie. And it's pretty disgusting.
Yeah, bit of a somber note to end on.
But it's
important that younger generations do learn about it. I'm going to be honest, I know the bare facts of it. Like I said, I'd heard of it. I've seen something about it in the past. I was guessing at the number. I got the number right, but I must have just heard it a couple of times. But it is a piss take that it's not as well known as some of the other tragedies, because you know there's no fucking hierarchy to tragedies. It doesn't matter what the football club does. People are people. Nightmare. I'm going to go look up on that tonight, I think.
Worth a read.
Yeah, I think it's probably worth fucking checking out. John says he's off to go and watch Norwich play like Barcelona. I can't prove to you that Norwich invented tiki-taka, but the timing worked out. So let's just say they did.
If you can watch Bayern versus Norwich, I think at the in Germany, I think Jeremy Goss who got the winner, you'll see what Steve's on about. You'll see the football they're playing. And you've got to put it in context of, if you look at the players he had, everyone knows Chris Sutton. Mark Robbins was a reject from United. Fergie happily sold him. You know, Chris Sutton was a defender that Mike Walker put up front. Jeremy Goss was like a non-league or a lower league player. It was just like Rule Fox was this player that had been sort of floating around low division. It was a ragtag of like a bit like Cluffy with his team. They just came together and it works. And
it's also on the pitch as well, because people are going to go, that's not as fast and 1-2 touch passing and stuff as Barcelona was. But yeah, but you're not playing on the carpet till the new camp was.
I remember literally, every other professional football team in the fucking world played like Wimbledon did in the 88 Cup final.
Yeah.
This is weird. This is as alien as someone from fucking 1890 coming now and trying to just play the way they played. It was that was alien then. It's well worth checking out.
100%.
Right, we're out of here. Cheers for tuning in, everybody. We have got Paddock memberships where you can get additional content, including an off-the-record podcast where I got my knob out.
This
rum-fueled nonsense again with you lot?
No, this was sober.
Oh, God.
Yeah, this was sober, yeah. There was a lot of rum-fueled nonsense at the weekend, but that was on my channel.
Good.
But if you want to check it out, hit the join button below. Merch box are on the way. And providing the sample goes well, which I think I get on Friday, y'all should be getting the away kit before 1 month before anybody else gets it. The Paddock Legends tier is getting it, but also my patrons, you can buy it as well because you're all fucking top. So that's for supporting the channel, everything like that. You get a little bit of a perky perk. Go check out Jay arguing with people at RFFH on Twitter. Go see what Alex is up to. He was arguing with Tories, I think, today.
I'm just retweeting Jay at the minute. That's all I do. You know what? Jay's arguments.
I've been slacking a little bit because I'm not going to lie to you.
I'm in your head.
It's just the time. I haven't got the time to argue with everyone that's arguing with me. So
he's got to be selective with his arguments.
Exactly. I have got to spend a little bit of time with my children now and again. Yeah. So I'm having to be a bit more selective, but I'll try and up my game. Come on.
All right. Nice one, everyone. Like I said, hit the join button below and go see what the perks are. And we will see you guys in the next one.